Commonwealth of Virginia. And we have Mr. Griffith and Mr. Stiles. Mr. Griffith. Mr. Griffith, did you wish to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would wish to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Save 2 minutes for rebuttal, and I will just ask counsel in this case, as well as the rest of the cases, please be sure you sign in on the sign-off sheets. And we are happy whenever you'd like to hear from you whenever you'd like to be here.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The court has granted the petition on two assignments of error in this case. I think it's certainly clear that that one, which has a certain bit of primacy, has to do with the question of whether the Commonwealth may compel a blood sample from a person who is a suspect in a driving while intoxicated case without first obtaining a search warrant and without the consent of the individual from whom the blood sample is being taken. Certainly the case bears consideration by this court in light of several Supreme Court of the United States opinions interpreting the Fourth Amendment that have yet to be incorporated into Virginia appellate law with respect to this specific issue.
Do you concede that, and my reading of the record, he was never informed of an informed consent law, but assuming he had, he was only faced with civil penalties if he had refused?
I would concede that in this case he was only facing civil penalties if he had refused. However, I don't think that is at all determinative of the issue in this case.
Well, Justice, go ahead.
I think there was another part to that question, and that is, you can see that he was not read the implied consent law.
The record does not establish that he was read the implied consent law. Whether or not
I generally mean he wasn't.
I understand. Certainly, Your Honor, I think with respect to that, and I think that's an important point that the court raises in this case, because it is clear from the McNeely decision as well as from the recent Birchville decision that if the Commonwealth is seeking to enter into evidence the result of this blood draw that was performed without a search warrant, that it must establish one of the well-established exigencies or the well-established exceptions for the admission of that blood. In this case, what the Commonwealth relies upon is consent. And with respect to that, certainly as the court indicates, the record does not show that Mr. Wolf was in fact read implied consent in this case. So
let,
what the Commonwealth...
Let me ask you about this comment by Justice Alito in Birchfield. Our prior opinions have referred approvingly to the general concept of implied consent laws that impose civil penalties and evidentiary consequences on motorists who refuse to comply. Petitioners do not question the constitutionality of those laws, and nothing we say here should be read to cast doubt on them.
And
isn't that exactly what we're dealing with here?
Actually, it's not, Your Honor, because we're not dealing with whether or not, one, Mr. Wolf was not charged with refusal in this case. So we're not dealing with any possible penalty he would have faced had the evidence, or had he refused, or had the evidence not been taken in this case.
But
what we're dealing with is the admissibility of the evidence.
But taking that statement from Justice Alito, if he had been read informed consent and the only threat was a civil penalty and he says, okay, draw the blood, that's not an... You would concede that is not an unconstitutional coerced consent. If it's only a civil penalty, given that line from Justice Alito.
Based on the current case law, I would say that were those the facts in this case, that that would not be a unconstitutional or a coerced consent. But that's not the facts that we have in our case, because...
Well, in Birchfield, there's three different cases, and it seems to me you're closest to Mr. Balin's as the other, as opposed to Mr. Birchfield, and
I think that's accurate.
All right, well, talk to me why Mr. Balin's conviction is potentially good in his case. At least it's going back to the trial court.
Well, it's going back to the trial court, and the determination has to be made, and that's really the determination that this court has to make as well with respect to, well, in Mr. Balin's case, Mr. Balin actually consented to the blood being taken in this case. In Mr. Wolf's case, you have explicit evidence on the record at page 49 indicating that he told Deputy Iverson, I do not want a blood test, and don't draw my blood. So in this case, unlike Mr. Balin's case, you have a situation where Mr. Wolf has not consented to the drawing of his blood in this case, which places it closer on all fours with McNeely McNeely, you certainly had a situation where, once again, Justice Ginsburg was talking about, talking approvingly on the fact that implied consent exists in all 50 states. Nonetheless, there was a blood draw in McNeely. The individual McNeely explicitly said, I do not want my blood taken in that case, and the court determined that the blood would not be admissible in a DUI conviction in that matter. We're not dealing with whether or not the Commonwealth may charge someone with refusal if they don't comply with implied consent.
At the time of the actual draw,
yes,
was there any manifestation of a lack of consent? I mean, it seems to me, in my reading of the record, some time has passed. We've had the three failed blows. We go, and there's no indication at all.
Your Honor, I would say at the time of the draw, there was no manifestation of a lack of consent, but I don't think that's required by the case law. And furthermore, we get to a situation, I think it's kind of similar to something Judge Petty raised on an earlier writ panel. In this case, you have an individual who said, no, don't take my blood. I don't want a needle in my arm. Really, that is, first of all, sufficient in terms of showing that one doesn't consent to a blood draw. And furthermore, as a policy issue, it should be, because we don't want to create a decision or a situation where individuals have to do more.
I'm not sure his statement was as explicit as you portray it. I read it to mean, I don't like needles. I'll consent.
I'll refer the court to page 49 of the appendix, but in fact, F.B. Iverson does testify that, in fact, he said he did not want a blood draw in this case, which is about as explicit as one can be in terms of a lack of...
That was when they were discussing the breath test, whether he would take a breath test.
It was, yes.
After he didn't do so, or wasn't able to perform the breath test, there was no further discussion, at least in this record, as to whether or not he would revoke his consent to have his blood drawn.
Well, I would indicate to the court that him saying that I don't want a blood draw is a revocation of his implied consent in this case. What you're dealing with is, one, a situation where the Commonwealth is attempting to use blood evidence that was taken without a warrant. They bear the burden of showing that they've established one of the exceptions. In this case, you have implied consent with an individual who has made no statements indicating that he does want a blood draw, versus his explicit statement that I do not want a blood draw in the case.
Help me with this. You mentioned that the Beelan portion of Birchfield is the one most in line with what we have here. And in Beelan, the court specifically sent it back to the lower court for determination of whether the officer reading him the criminal implied consent law constituted coerced consent. Now, we don't have a criminal statute involved in this case. We have a civil statute only. And the case seems to implicate that as long as it's not a criminal punishment, there's no such thing as coerced consent. Is that really the gist of this case?
Your Honor, I do have to respectfully disagree once again, because we're not talking about coerced consent. We're not talking about an individual who consented to anything. He told the deputy, I do not want my blood taken in this case. So, if anything, the case from the Supreme Court that's closest to the facts at issue is McNeely, because you have a situation where an individual explicitly states that I do not want my blood taken. And in the McNeely court, it was found that despite the fact that implied consent existed in Missouri and every other state at the point in time in which McNeely was decided, and certainly McNeely was decided well before the blood draw in this case, the court found that that blood was not admissible at his trial for DUI.
What exactly? I mean, McNeely is a plurality opinion. It seems to me that the only consensus among the justices is that the exigent circumstances doesn't apply.
You're right, Dale. There was a majority with respect to the disposition of McNeely, namely that the blood would not come in the DUI.
But the reason why is not explicit. There's no fifth vote.
Your Honor, I think certainly an officer on the street who's being trained as to the nature of a Supreme Court decision needs to be less concerned with what the rationale is and more concerned with
what we do.
Understood, Your Honor. But the question is whether or not, so the question before the court is, one, having to do, I think it's clear from the Supreme Court decisions that you may not take blood without obtaining a warrant. I mean, I think that's been established. It's certainly clear in what Justice Alito writes in Birchfield. It's further clear in what was written in McNeely v. Missouri v. McNeely, which was decided before this.
If you may not take blood without a warrant, why did the Supreme Court have to remand Beeland's conviction?
Has to do with
why didn't they just reverse it?
Well, that has to do with the fact that Mr. Beeland actually gave consent in his case, Your Honor. There's nothing in the record indicating that Mr. Wolf gave explicit consent in this case. The only thing that's relied on by the Commonwealth is the fact that implied consent existed.
If I understand your argument, it is that your client is guilty of refusal under the implied consent statute regarding his blood and should have been subjected to civil penalties?
That's certainly a possibility from the Commonwealth. I don't think I'm going to make that stipulation because there are other elements to whether or not one is actually guilty of refusal in the case. But certainly the Commonwealth had at its disposal the ability to charge him with refusal. And that's really the crux of what the Birchfield opinion is saying with respect to blood. It's not that implied consent means you get to get the blood in. It's that implied consent means that if someone chooses to exercise their Fourth Amendment right to not have their blood taken, then the state, because it has a compelling interest in DUI convictions or DUI prosecutions, has a remedy. And that remedy can be taking their driver's license or other
civil penalties. There's no evidence in this record that the defendant was forcibly held down and had blood drawn. At best, I mean, the fact is there's really nothing in this record to show what happened at the hospital. How do we know that this defendant didn't say, okay? I mean, he must have submitted to the blood draw.
It's difficult for me to imagine that the court wants to create a situation whereby someone has to actually be strapped down and their blood drawn for it to be shown that they did not consent to have the search performed in this case. The nature of the search is a very personal search, as was indicated by Justice Alito in this case.
I'm looking for a record that establishes that he refused to have his blood drawn, that he did not consent to it. And I normally look at the implied consent form that is filled out by the office. And it's not in this case. So I just wonder whether or not the defendant changed his mind and agreed to have his blood drawn once he got to the hospital.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think the burden to show that's on the Commonwealth in this case. It's not my burden to show that he refused.
It's your burden to establish that error has occurred.
And, Your Honor, I would say that error has occurred. This court reviews whether or not consent. Whether or not the Commonwealth established sufficient consent de novo, as it did in Schnecklaw, as it did before, not this court, but the Supreme Court did in Schnecklaw, Bumper, this court did in Crosby and Deere. It is the court's determination to determine whether or not de novo consent has been made in this case. And what you have, the analysis that is closest to really is, I refer the court again to a Supreme Court opinion, it's Georgia v. Randolph. Because you have a situation where you have implied consent, where an individual has due to the nature of the statute, there's an implication that one has consented to have their blood drawn. But you have an explicit statement by an individual saying that I do not want my blood drawn. And in George v. Randolph, the Supreme Court said that, well, that's not sufficient to establish consent because an officer presented with these competing variations cannot have a good faith basis to believe that consent's been established in the case. And I think the analysis in this case, in the Wolf case, is very similar to that because what the record does show is that it's very explicit that he said, the officer was clear as day, I do not want my blood drawn. And I would suggest to the court
I'm at page 49, and I see, he said he didn't like, much like Judge Petty, he didn't like needles, he didn't like needles.
One moment, Your Honor.
Brian, you may want to look it up while...
Mr. Gregory, you're into your rebuttal time. If you would like to wait in response to that...
I'll respond to that rebuttal.
Okay, I'll get it out there.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Grace Dale on behalf of the Commonwealth. Your Honor, here we have a situation where Mr. Wolf consented to the breath test, consented to the blood test, and that's what we have. This is just a pretty much straightforward type DUI case.
Well, Mr. Stellar, how about what your colleague raises before us that didn't actually?
Well, to the extent that argument is being made now, I don't believe that same argument was made at the trial court. Now, I direct the court to the appendix at page 79, starting at line 3. This is the argument at trial, at which point Mr. Wolf had said He never asked him, do you want to take the blood test? Yes, the evidence is such that the defendant never said no, but there was no indication the defendant ever said yes either. With implied consent, there's an implication or a presumption that he's consenting. In order, all these other cases talk about an explicit revocation of that consent. Here, when counsel's arguing, he said he never said no. There was no explicit revocation based on the facts of this case. And even as the court has indicated, I think even if the court was to de novo somehow look at this statements, the context of this was he was trying to do a breath test. The officer told him, if you burp, whatever, within 20 minutes, we've got to start the clock over. That happened twice. The officer then says, look, if this happens one more time, we're going to have to go get a blood test. He said, well, I don't want to do that. I don't like needles. And the indication, the context is, I'm going to try again to do the breath test. It was not an outright refusal. I'm never doing a breath test. That's not happening, whatever. It's not an explicit, unequivocal revocation of his consent to the breath test, blood test. He then attempts again to do the breath test, again, burps or so forth, at which point the officer says, you've had three shots. We're now going to do a blood test. At that point, he doesn't say, nope, not doing it. There's no indication that when he got to the hospital wherever this was going to be administered that he again said, I'm not doing this, I don't want to do this, I'm revoking my consent. There's absolutely nothing on the record to indicate once he was confronted with the actuality of having a blood test that he revoked anything. And that was never argued in the trial court either. McNeely, as the court stated earlier, stands for the proposition that there's no exigent circumstances in a DUI case, which means if you have an arrest and someone doesn't consent or revokes their consent to the thing, the police are required to get a warrant because you can't just rely, well, alcohol is dissipating, therefore we have accident, we can go get it.
Let me ask you about one argument you have made. You cited Davis versus the United States as to the retroactive applicability of Birdshield. Isn't it correct that as of the time this case was tried, the state of the law was that drawing blood for purposes of a DUI prosecution was in fact a search, and therefore there would have to be some exception to the warrant, to the requirement of search in order to allow it?
That is true, and obviously here the exception we're arguing is consent.
And wasn't the state of the law when this case was tried that coerced consent is no consent?
That would obviously be that's the state of the law generally, so I would agree.
So really, Birdshield didn't say anything when
it did. Right. The only thing it did say new is that the criminal application of the implied consent law, or the criminal ramifications for that, that would constitute coerced consent. And that's clearly not a factor in this case because that was never an option and he was never charged with any consent at all. He's never read the implied consent law. So there's no indication he was facing that. So I think the defendant's reliance on Birdshield is somehow being different or affecting this case. I don't believe that is accurate.
Is that language then in Birdshield from Justice Alito dicta about the applicability of nothing in this opinion should be read to impact civil implied consent laws? Because none of those cases involve civil implied consent.
Well, to the extent it's dicta, I think the same information would logically flow from the actual holding, which is the only problem the court has in this case. And given the lead up in the majority opinion, that because of the increased penalties for DUI, to combat the fact that people are not consenting, they're saying, well, they now have these criminal penalties for refusing, which can be as severe as refusal. And the court says that becomes a problem when you're exercising your Fourth Amendment right. And then
I don't understand why a threat has to be a threat of criminal prosecution as opposed to a threat of some civil consequence in order for the consent to be coerced.
Again, while not a factor in this case, I think they are meaningfully different because implied consent still talks about driving on the public roads, public safety, public issues. The civil penalty would be a revocation of that right.
Suppose the law permitted, I don't think it does, but suppose the law permitted the seizure of a motor vehicle if one is found guilty of driving in the vehicle. Is And the police officer said, unless you consent to this blood draw, I'm going to take your car away from you. Would that be voluntary consent?
It may depend on what other factors are played, but if that's the only issue that occurs, if he had previously said, I'm not going to do it, and then the fact I'm going to take your car, that may well be an issue for a finder of fact to determine whether or not the consent was still voluntary. I don't know if there's a per se rule there. And again, there may be remedial actions that can be taken if it turns out it was validly seized. And there may well be an issue where a civil penalty becomes as onerous as a criminal.
We've got case law, I know, in this country that says that a revocation of a driver's license is a revocation of a privilege that requires due process, that you can't arbitrarily deny someone or take someone's driver's license away. So it is a right to some extent.
Well, it's a privilege, but in order to take away the privilege, certain rights have to be protected. And that's why he would have to be convicted of the refusal, which would be a trial which has elements to come along with bridge and so forth, which would be the due process requirements being met through that process. It's a different issue to say that merely I'm going to take a civil charge against you for failing to consent is different than saying I'm going to take a criminal charge where you could be facing 12 months or more in jail, depending on which refusal were had at that point. But the court specifically said it was the criminal ones that it had an issue with. Now, whether it's dicta or just a logical conclusion you could draw from those facts, it seems to me that the issue the court had was you cannot criminalize this, so the penalties for refusing are as bad or not, or potentially even worse than the penalties for actually consenting and being convicted of the DUI. That, to me, seems to be the issue the court had, is you can't penalize the person for either being drunk or refusing to prove that he's drunk, and that seemed to be the issue the court had, and that would seem to be the rationale behind where they went down, like Justice Alito, likely wrote what he did, saying, you know, civil, we're not talking about civil penalties, they're not the same. They are, in fact, materially different. And just to briefly touch on the second issue, it's clear in here when the Commonwealth was talking about why he refused to take the blood test, was unable to complete the breath test. It was not an effort to say he must be guilty, he refused to do this, which is what the court says. Like, the purpose here was merely to lay the foundation as to why there was a blood test and not a breath test. And the court says, you know, you're not doing this to prove he's guilty because he refused. You're saying he refused the breath test, was able to complete the breath test as an explanation for why they had a blood test. It was not used for an improper purpose. That's what the trial court found. That's not plainly wrong. And as such, I said the court didn't err in allowing that testimony and to explain to the fact finder why we had a blood test and not a breath test. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
One question, and I know you didn't cite this, but it is sitting out there. Do we need to address the statement in Rowley that in Virginia's implied consent law is an irrevocable consent?
That may be some language that would have to be addressed. I don't believe this court would need to reach that issue in this case, because I believe we have consent. I don't believe it was ever revoked. To the extent there's an argument that it could have been revoked, that argument was not presented to the trial court. I think that language does, on its face, seem to be somewhat at odds with the language of Birchfield, but I don't believe that's an issue that this court would need to reach at this time. I'd ask the court to adjourn.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Your Honor, I'd first address the issue that the assertion that the issue of consent wasn't brought up at the trial court. I'd refer the court to page 76 of the appendix in this case, where I specifically indicate I'm asking the court to determine whether or not the Commonwealth has established consent for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment in the case. So certainly was raised before the trial court. It's clearly an issue in this case. Speaking to the last question raised, I would disagree with counsel's assertion and indicate the court does need to reach the Rowley language regarding the irrevocability of consent with respect to the implied consent law. Because in this case, what it boils down to is, given that there was no warrant obtained, the Commonwealth has to establish, in fact, that consent occurred, or the record has to establish whether or not consent occurred in this case. And if such consent, as Rowley indicates, is irrevocable, then the job is done. But that's clearly at odds with the Supreme Court opinions that have come in the light of Rowley. So I would ask the court to go back to look at Rowley. Clearly, the Supreme Court's indicated that such implied consent is revocable, and it was, in fact, revoked in this case.
Rowley, of course, deals with the breath test.
It does.
So we may be, it may still be good law as it applies to the breath test. Would you agree with that?
I would still disagree with that, Your Honor. I think if anything, if the court reads Birchfield, reads McNeely, what the court's indicating is that an individual always has a Fourth Amendment right to refuse to give consent in a situation where a search is being sought. A commonwealth, a state, may not legislate around a person's Fourth Amendment right to be secure in their homes, persons, effects, or papers. So whether or not that consent's irrevocable is fine. What the commonwealth's remedy with respect to someone asserting that Fourth Amendment right is a different issue. That's not the issue in this case. The issue in this case is the admissibility of the evidence that was obtained without consent and without a search warrant in this case.
Okay. We will come back and agree with that.